Play Nirvana.
The Cobain 50.
Nirvana.
Kurt Cobain's top 50 albums.
Nirvana.
From listener powered KEXP.
This is the Cobain 50 from listener powered KEXP. I'm Martin Douglas.
And I'm Dusty Henry. This week, our audio producer Roddy Nickpour is diving into the album Dry by PJ Harvey, which dropped in 1992.
I'm really stoked because this month, in alignment with Women's History Month, we're going to be dedicating the next several episodes to some of the femme bands on Kurt's list. So today we're going to start with PJ Harvey, but we're also going to get into the works of the Slits, the Raincoats, and Kleenex. And you know, obviously, these are just a few of the women artists that made on Kurt's list. There's a lot more on the list. But it's been really a fun exercise to look at these four in particular as such foundational artists for punk and alternative music as we know it today.
If you grouped any four albums on this entire list, these are the four albums that I am most excited about. Yes, they're all by women, but more importantly, they're all kick-ass albums.
And all British? Is that right? I think they might all
are
be
they
British,
all British? Kleenex is Swiss.
Oh, okay.
So, European. I mean, all European artists, which is, yeah, an interesting wrinkle I didn't even think of.
I didn't think about it until we started working on it. But really excited we're kicking off with PJ Harvey. I mean, it's hard to talk about grunge and like 90s rock music in general without talking about, you know, Nirvana or PJ. Dry was the most recent album on the list by the time it was written, 1992.
Looking back at this list, it's so crazy that the most recent album is from 32 years ago, if you're listening to this podcast new.
So without further ado, here's Roddy Nickpour on Dry by PJ Harvey.
There are only a few musicians who might be able to fill Kurt's shoes fronting Nirvana, at least according to Dave Grohl. After all, as Dave himself says, it's hallowed ground. The only Nirvana song he ever let the Foo Fighters cover was the B-side Marigold, which Dave himself wrote in the first place. Since Kurt's death in 1994, Dave Grohl and Chris Novoselic have a habit of asking badass women to sing in Kurt's place.
So here is a lady who I can't believe is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, who should be.
I'm mostly talking about the 2014 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Dave and Chris played several songs from Nirvana's repertoire, fronted by St. Vincent, Kim Gordon, Lorde, and Joan Jett. For what it's worth, I guess Nirvana kind of got together a year before with a male guest vocalist, a certain Paul McCartney, and God love him for trying out his grunge chops on the mic. Mama, I wanna have some fun. Now, one of the people they asked on multiple occasions was Polly Jean, or PJ Harvey. Dave says he wanted her to do the song Milk It from In Utero, since he says, it almost sounds like a song that PJ would have written herself. I know you're itching for an answer as to why PJ Harvey did not end up playing with Nirvana. And trust me, it's a really salacious story, and we'll get to it at the end. But first, let's get to her debut album, Dry, the one that made Kurt's top 50 albums list. PJ Harvey was born in the south coast of England, in Dorset. Her parents turned her on to music by way of Bob Dylan. Kill me a son. Babe, say man, you must be putting me on. Those roots in the blues have stuck with PJ throughout her career to this day. She even covered Bob Dylan's Highway 61 Revisited on her second album, Rid of Me. By the way, this album just so happened to be mixed by Steve Albini, the famous producer who worked with the likes of the Pixies and, obviously, Nirvana. PJ learned guitar and saxophone at a young age, and she really solidified her skill by playing with a few groups, including a band called Automatic Blamini. At just 19 years old, she was really developing her unique tone on the guitar and stage presence. Bear in mind, this was the late 1980s. There were women blazing their own path all over at this point. Kim Deal of the Pixies, Susie Sue, who you might know from her affiliation with the Banshees, and Kate Bush, whose career was so much more expansive than that one song that was overplayed in Stranger Things. In other words, PJ had a lot of influences to look up to and see herself taking center stage. In the early 90s, PJ formed a new band where she could put her lyrical work at the forefront. It was simply called the PJ Harvey Trio. She formed the group alongside two members from Automatic Blamini, Rob Ellis and Ian Oliver. And, well, let's just say the trio didn't exactly get off to an auspicious start. Here's PJ talking with NPR's Linda Wertheimer about their first live show, which took place in 1991.
Yeah, we started playing. I suppose there was about 50 people there. And in the first song, we cleared the hall. There was about two people left. And a woman came up to us, came up to my drummer, there was only a three-piece, while we were playing, and shouted at him, "Don't you realise nobody likes you? We'll pay you. You can stop playing. We'll still pay you." It was enough to, yeah, I pretty much wanted to give up at that point.
Needless to say, PJ kept at it, and she dropped her debut full-length album the next year, Dry. And that year was 1992. By this point, the grunge movement was in full swing with bands like Mudhoney, Pearl Jam, and even our boys Nirvana, who just put out Nevermind in 1991. But, I mean, come on, oh my god, do you really think I'm going to put the spotlight on such surface-level look at grunge during Women's History Month? Let's not forget those pioneering bands that helped bring this genre to prevalence. Right alongside PJ Harvey, we heard bands like L7. Garbage would make their debut a few short years later. Why it feels so good to feel so sad. I'm only happy when it rains. And even in Kurt's home state, we had Bikini Kill, Bam Bam, and, to drive the point home, a group called Dickless, which included the current CEO of Sub Pop Records, Megan Jasper. All this to say, the stage was set for more women to make their mark. Women like PJ Harvey. PJ recognized the privilege of being able to write her first solo album, so she didn't hold anything back. In an interview with Filter magazine in 2004, she said, quote, "I felt like I had to get everything on it as well as I possibly could, because it was probably my only chance. It felt very extreme for that reason." On one end of the spectrum on Dry, you've got distorted guitars and sing shouting, like on this track, Sheila McGee, which you could almost swear was co-written by Nirvana. And I say that, yes, because of the musicality, but also the message in the song. And let's start with that concept of Sheila McGee. These were statues that were prevalent across Europe in the Middle Ages, but their origin is still mysterious. And one hypothesis, and you'll see where I'm going with this, is that they were fertility statues meant to ward off evil spirits. These statues feature exaggerated female body parts, and to make your eyes roll even further, these were often found in churches. PJ Harvey calls on the image of the Sheila McGee to criticize the objectification of women that has persisted for millennia. And also like Nirvana, PJ isn't a one-trick pony. Her music has tremendous range, and so on the other end of the spectrum, Dry offers these careless, strumming, warm tones, singing longingly in vague terms.
Stella Marie, oh my star, stand on ground about her.
The themes on Dry also resonate with Kurt's instincts as an ally. Both artists wrote songs confronting the fragility of womanhood. For example, how f***ed up it is that men will take advantage of women. And while they're both willing to tackle these controversial topics and advocate on victims' behalfs, let's not forget that PJ Harvey has a distinct vantage point over Kurt Cobain, being a woman herself. Dry was a widespread critical success. It was on the UK albums chart for 5 weeks, peaking at number 11. In particular, the track Sheila Nagee peaked at number 9 on the Billboard Modern Rock charts the year that it was released. Rolling Stone magazine named PJ Harvey Best Songwriter and Best New Female Singer of 1992. Two British publications, New Musical Express and Melody Maker, both named Dry in their list of top 100 greatest albums of all time. Critics were paying particular attention to PJ's poetic style of writing about a vulnerable phase of life, and then uniquely pairing it with loud, distorted guitars. All the praise from Dry led PJ Harvey to release her second album, even touring with U2 in 1993. But this ended up being PJ Harvey's final tour as a proper band, and as such, PJ thought that this tour would be her swan song, that she'd end her career as a musician with just two albums. But the opposite happened, in fact. You know that cliche about doors closing and doors opening? Well, now that she was free from her trio, performing as a solo artist has opened up so many doors for collaboration. And collaborate she has. PJ Harvey has worked alongside a bunch of artists, including Thom Yorke. This mess Cave, and the late Mark Lanegan.
Who kept us apart. Through my mind's every right.
But one of my favorite highlights is this moment from when she covered the Rolling Stones alongside Bjork at the Brit Awards in 1994. PJ provides this cool-headed composure, playing the blues that she was raised with, and Bjork is doing her Bjork thing, going hard with her signature vocal style. It's this hair-raising performance by two of the most powerful women in music, taking something that men made and making it 1,000 times more impactful.
I can get no
Much like the surviving members of Nirvana, PJ Harvey is still performing live. She's touring across Europe this summer, she's got 10 albums worth of material to draw on, and her latest album came out last year, titled I Inside the Old Year Dying. She performed selections of it for NPR's Tiny Desk Concert Series. In this past decade, PJ Harvey has also harnessed her lyricism into published collections of poetry. She was even invited to read poetry at the Michael Warner Gallery in London earlier this year.
And the cat was warmed by her smile. It kept the cat in control.
PJ's success as a guitar-wielding singer-songwriter has inspired countless women in music. PJ is a role model for brooding authenticity. She uses a balance of lethargic lyrics and all-out wall of sound to convey the duality of growing up. You hear the influence of Dry in acts like Sleater-Kinney, Taco Cat, Florence and the Machine, St. Vincent, Courtney Barnett. The list is truly endless. Some artists have been so inspired by PJ Harvey, in fact, that they've recorded covers of her music, like Nyla Foryana's cover of the song Rid of Me.
I'll make you lick my injuries. I'm gonna twist your head of sea.
The band Bully performed a cover of PJ's song Snake at the Sub Pop 30th Anniversary Festival in 2018. And even Courtney Love herself covered PJ Harvey's To Bring You My Love.
To bring you my love. To bring you my love.
Oh yeah, and I can't let you go without fulfilling my promise from earlier. Why did PJ Harvey decline playing with Dave and Chris for Nirvana? Well, okay, I lied. It's not that salacious at all. At this point, it might not surprise you to learn that it was just because of scheduling issues. And you really can't blame PJ. Because in a career spanning more than 30 years, PJ Harvey has been extremely prolific. So far, PJ Harvey has received 2 Mercury Prizes and 8 Grammy nominations, the 2005 book 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die by Robert DeMary includes several of PJ Harvey's albums, including Dry. It remains to be seen whether PJ Harvey might ever grace us with her rendition of Milk It, or any other Nirvana song for that matter. There's no immediate knowledge of a Nirvana revival with any guest vocalists, but if there were one, there is a good chance. It might be Kurt's twin sister in grunge. PJ Harvey was a true contemporary of Kurt Cobain. First of all, they're nearly the same age, and for those keeping score at home, Kurt was born 2 years earlier. As long as we're going there, I might as well also read you this passage about the similarities between their zodiac signs, the Pisces, Kurt, and the Libra, PJ. According to today.com, Libra and Pisces' love of art is likely the most common shared interest. Together with their escapist streaks, they can sense other people's emotions, making them empathetic to what others are experiencing. So in some ways, it was written in the stars. Even though they lived on different continents, Kurt and PJ both gave rise to the gritty, angsty sound that defined the 90s and punk at large.
That was Roddy Nickpour with PJ Harvey's Dry. What were your initial thoughts when you heard this record for the first time, Dusty?
You know, I don't think it was the first PJ I heard.
It definitely wasn't for me.
Yeah, so that was kind of interesting to go back because I think I hadn't spent as much time with this one, which may be heretical. And anecdotally, like, I was talking with my mom not long ago, and I found out she's a big PJ Harvey fan, which was kind of a cool thing to, like, stumble upon. And we both had the same favorite record, Stories from the City, Stories from the Sea. So that was really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. And knowing your mom, like, I feel as though, A, it's really cool that she's into PJ Harvey, and B, like, that's an appropriate favorite album for her, I think.
Absolutely. She'd talk about like listening to it on her lunch breaks with her coworkers smoking cigarettes. And I'm like, that's, how'd you get so cool, mom? Not that cigarettes or smoking is cool. KXP does not support smoking cigarettes. Anyway, yeah, it was really fun to go back and listen to this record. I always love getting a good origin story. You can really feel that she was putting everything into this album. And obviously she went so many different places after that. But it's like, I love when you can feel like raw ambition of a young artist, like, this is my shot and I'm going to take it.
That's the thing that I think about when re-listening to this album is the rawness. I saw a lot of Patti Smith comparisons mm-hmm. when doing research and re-listening to this album. I think that's really appropriate, especially in terms of the lyricism. It's very poetic, very strong writing. The raw feeling mixed with the strong, sharp lyricism, it really stands out.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool to think about PJ and Kurt kind of being like grunge siblings, and to think about these different artists existing on different parts of the globe on like similar paths in a lot of ways. The vulnerable, sharp songwriting, you know, the great production and arrangement. Makes me think about the 70s punk movements, which we're going to get to a lot in this series, or have already, and you know, in America and the UK, kind of building separately. But the difference being like PJ being much more indebted to the blues, I feel like, at least on my listen, than grunge was in the US.
Yeah, absolutely. And she would explore that style a lot more in the ensuing years as well. And I think it's very good point that you're raising on being influenced by the blues, because I feel as though the blues was really big for rock punk musicians in the UK. I mean, that's the foundation of rock and roll music.
The Stones,
yeah,
the Beatles.
Exactly. If there's anything that the UK rock scene does better than the American rock scene, is that they are more cognizant of the history of this music. And so, yeah, it comes out in a definitive way on this album. PJ Harvey's interpretation of the blues, or her influence from the blues, comes out in a very profoundly original way on this album, which is really cool to hear.
You know, it's interesting to think too with her, because there's a lot put on, you know, the grunge scene, 90s, I'm using grunge loosely here, but there's a lot put on there. It was very dude-centric scene that was like, at least the way it was portrayed in the mainstream, you know, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Soundgarden, and, you know, PJ was coming from this different perspective, and a lot of people examine her lyrics and be like, oh, this is very feminist. And I found this quote from her, which is kind of like refuting that, as in the Sunday Times, she said, "When I'm writing songs, I never write with gender in mind. I write about people's relationships to each other. I'm fascinated with things that might be considered repulsive or embarrassing. I like feeling unsettled, unsure." So that was a really interesting take that, you know, because she was one of the standout like women in this musical movement, it was automatically equated with feminism. And she's like, "I'm just being me. Like, I'm being a person."
Yeah. I like that she mentions writing about things that are uncomfortable, writing about discomfort, writing about things that, you know, might put people on edge. I feel as though this is a good quality for a Libra artist. PJ Harvey was born on October 9th. And I don't know, as a Libra, I feel a connection to artists who kind of move in an uncomfortable direction for the sake of art, to explore the less savory aspects of humanity. And I think because of our love of balance, Libras are very good at that.
And it's, you know, very Kurt in a lot of ways too. He would also love to be uncomfortable. And it's, again, just the parallel arcs they're having without knowing each other, or maybe not even, you know, some came in 92, Nevermind came out in 91. What a great 1-2 punch of albums coming out. If like you look at release dates in the 90s, like it's kind of crazy, like all these classic albums dropping at the same time. But yeah, no, it's just cool to think about that's such a universal experience between these two artists.
Another thing that I think about when investigating PJ Harvey is the variety of the albums that she would release later. You mentioned your mom listening to Stories from the City, Stories from the Sea, which was incredibly different from, say, To Bring You My Love, which is different from Her, which was released in 2004, which was radically different from White Chalk, where she's playing an auto harp and wearing a white dress. So many great albums that are very different from each other from this one artist, which is amazing, profound. And to think that Dry was at the beginning of her career, and she's still putting out albums today, she's still putting out meaningful work today, is amazing.
I kind of wonder if Kurt would have like put some other PJ record on this list had he, you know, heard where she would go next. Like, or maybe, you know, she does those duets with Tom York on Stories from the City. Like, in an alternate universe, it'd be so cool to hear like Kurt playing that kind of role in some of these experimentations.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking of what he would think about an album like White Chalk, which is, you know, like essentially a folk record from beamed in from another time.
Just all makes me thankful, like, as you mentioned, to have PJ as a singular artist still today. Like, shout out to PJ Harvey. Like, this has renewed my like enthusiasm and love for PJ.
Yeah.
Before we go, we want to thank you, dear listener, for helping us during KXP's Spring Fund Drive. We raised $750,000 and heard from more than 4,200 donors. Just kind of crazy to try to wrap my head around. So thank you all so much. You giving this gift helps us do what we're doing on this podcast. So if you like our hot takes, shitty takes, takes in general, please give us more money. No, but really it is. We really could not do this without you. Our storytelling is listener powered. We are independent, which is a very rare thing these days. We want to keep doing it forever. So we thank you for support. We depend on your support. If you want to help out KXP and our podcast, become an amplifier or leave a one-time donation at kexp.org/Cobain.
Thank you for your support if you donated money, if you intend to donate money. Thank you for supporting independent journalism, because this is an independent venture that we're doing. It's entirely community funded, and we are immensely grateful for that. This piece was produced and written by Roddy Nickpour. Our podcast manager is Isabel Khalili. And Larry Mizell Jr., our boss, is director of editorial. And I'm Martin Douglas.
And I'm Dusty Henry. We'll see you next week on the Cobain 50 from Listener Powered, KEXP, where the music matters.
Corporate magazines still suck.
Well, you're going to hear more about it from Roddy Nickpour. Roddy Nickpour.
That's my wrestler name.
I'm going to get you, brother. Roddy Nickpour.